In the scripture reading, one of the aspects that it talks about with parenting is the fact that there is this discipline element and that there's pain and it doesn't seem to be enjoyable. And I think sometimes that's becomes the focus of parenting, is that it is hard. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that'll come up in this lesson. But there is a lot of joy to be found in parenting and in doing it God's way. When we do things God's way, there's a lot more joy to be found, and it doesn't have to be something where you just survive it. Now, I think that's a term that we sometimes feel as parents and hear from other parents. It's just like, I'm just surviving it. We just are trying to hang in there. But then what happens, unfortunately, is that you just try and survive and survive and survive, and then you get to the other side of raising your children, and you say, oh, it went so fast. And it's like, well, wait a second, what happened? I was just surviving it, and then it was gone, and then I'm wistfully missing it. And this is the point. God has designed us so that if we'll do things His way, we can live in the moment, we can enjoy the moment, even when that is hard and it has hard elements to it, but that it can be a really joyous thing. And so I've entitled this sermon, Parenting in 7 Joyful Steps, because I do think that if we do it God's way, you can have a great deal more joy than what you may currently have. There can be more joy for the parents. There can be more joy for the kids. There can be more joy whether your kids are very young and you're in that stage of sleep deprivation, or your kids are older and they've learned that powerful word, no, or the even worse word, the three-letter word, why. You can have joy in that time period too. Or the four-letter word, teen. It goes from a two-letter word to a three-letter word to a four-letter word. Or if your kids have left the house and they're now adults themselves and your heart is now out there walking amongst the world. I think there is a way that we can do it that brings more joy. And when we do that, we reflect the family design that God always intended. Because ultimately, the design of the family is a God-given design. God designed families to be the cornerstone of growth in mankind. And so if we do it God's way, we will find ourselves happier, more fulfilled, more complete people. Parenting in 7 Joyful Steps. Let's start with the first one that doesn't sound very joyful at all, but don't expect your children to like you. This one is kind of a classic one, but I want you to understand that it can, in fact, be quite freeing. Don't expect your children to like you. Proverbs 13, verse 24, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Or Hebrews 12, which we read already, verse 8 through 11, that discipline, it seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. If you enter into your relationship with your children, understanding that you are not looking for a friend, this is, I think, one of the great cornerstones of good parenting, is that if your kids end up liking you, that's great. In fact, I think that is a natural byproduct that often will happen. But that's not your goal. Your goal is not for them to like you. Your goal is to be a friend to them, whether they like it or not. It's like when Jesus says, "You are my friends if you keep my commandments." I always thought that would be a weird way of taking friendship if we did it with our peers, wouldn't it? If you befriended somebody your own age, a peer, and you said, "Look, you want to be friends? Yeah, let's be friends. Okay, so you do whatever I tell you." That's not how you normally make friends, is it? But what Jesus said when he said, "You are my friends if you keep my commandments," what he meant is he understood that he was not in a position of equality with them. time and experience and maturity certainly had not made Jesus equivalent with his apostles. But he had befriended them. And he was trying to lead them a way that would make them better people, that they would have more success. And Jesus's self-esteem was not dependent upon whether or not Peter liked him. And that's important, because there would be times where the apostles would let Jesus down. And at least one of them would very much not be Jesus' friend. If we're going to parent right, we have to understand that there's going to be times in that process where our kids do not like the process, which means they will associate it with not liking you. When I was a kid, my dad, for Father's Day, I found this poem. They were selling it in the mall, and it said, "The meanest father in the world." And I gave that to my dad, thinking, ha! And he framed it and hung it in the house for years. Yes, you see what my son gave me? Badge of honor. Because my dad did not find his identity in whether or not I was his buddy. Now, having said that, I like my dad now. We get along nicely. But as a parent, you will find so much more joy in parenting if you find grown-ups to be your friends. Be friends with your spouse. Find other ways to build your self-esteem. Don't look at your teenager being the one to give it to you. Because ultimately, that's not their job, right? Things go wrong when we expect people to do things that isn't their job. A child is not in the position, and nor do they have the tools to build up the self-esteem of an adult. It's too much to saddle a kid with. Don't expect them to like you. The second one is, consistency is more important than perfection. You will have a lot more joy in your parenting if you realize you do not have to do everything right. Parenting is a lot like playing baseball. Baseball has 160 games or something like that. You have a lot of at-bats, a lot of swings at the pitch, and most of the time, you miss. But you take a good cut every time. Parenting, you are not going to hit a home run every time you're up to bat. There are going to be days that you just don't do it right. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7 through 9, it says, "You shall teach him diligently, your children shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." It's a verse we refer to all the time in parenting. But do you understand the point of this verse? It's about consistency, not perfection. You're not going to get everything right. So also don't beat yourself up too much over the times that you make mistakes. Hebrews chapter 12, one of the key ideas there in verse 9 and 10 is it talks about fathers, and he says, "For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good that we may share his holiness." There's a comparison made between earthly fathers and our heavenly father. Our heavenly father disciplines us for our good. That means he always does it right. Earthly fathers, for a short time, as seemed best to them. You understand the implication there? Yeah, your dad got it wrong sometimes. Mom and dad did not know what they were doing all the time. I have some of my older kids, and sometimes they say, "Why did you do this or that?" And I go, "I have no idea. Probably I was hungry. I was trying my best." Right? It's not that you're not trying, it's just that you're not perfect. And this is also why you will find that the most important aspect of teaching your children about Christ is that you be consistent in your worldview, not just Sunday morning. Like, who you are when you get in the car, when you drive home, is vastly more important than who you appear to everybody else while you're sitting in the pew Sunday morning. Who you are when you're talking to your buddies, or when you're on that phone call at work, but now you're working remotely so your kids can hear you through the door. How you speak to your coworkers, that's a big thing. How you treat their mother. Your consistency in parenting. Do you have favorites? Do you pray? Or do you only pray at mealtime? Are you the same person all the time? The most disparaging statement Jesus ever made about anybody was to the Pharisees. And he said, "You are hypocrites. You act one way here, but you're just pretending because you're another way there." Kids can sense that. Kids know hypocrites. Kids know the dad who acts one way at work and another way at church. Kids know the mom that has the phone voice. That just it's I'm so happy and nice and friendly on the phone, but then as soon as she gets off the phone, the fangs come out. They know that. Are you consistent to your worldview? Not perfect. You don't have to do everything perfect. It really brings us the next point. Consistency is so important because the days are long, but the years are short. Consistency is important because it feels like when you're parenting, it's going to take forever. Proverbs 19:18, "Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death." That is the most human proverb. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. That is, look, discipline your kid, don't give up on him, don't kill him. That's what that says. You know, discipline your kid, raise him in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. Look, I know he's done the same thing wrong 400 times. But don't give up hope. I know you told him to pick up his dish 500 times. But don't give up hope. I know you told him to clean his room 500 times. I know you've taught them how to do addition or multiplication tables or whatever it is 1,000 times. Don't give up hope. Kids are squirrely. I mean, you think about when you talk to adults and the stories that adults tell each other about their childhood and the things that they put their parents through. Your kids are making those stories right now. That's what they're doing. They're making the stories that they will one day tell adults that they did and put their parents through. But you survived it. The fact of the matter is that a lot of times with disciplining your kids, we think, it's not working. It's not working. They're not listening. They don't care. I am completely unsuccessful. Proverbs 19 is for you. If you are in a stage with your kid where it seems like it is not getting through, there is no improvement, and that stage may be when they're little, and you're like, man, it's just not clicking. I take them out. You have these wonderful parents, and my heart goes out to all the parents who take their kids out and bring them back in and take them back out and bring them back in. And they're the ones who won't hear this sermon. Because they're going to be back and forth and back and forth and back and forth the whole time, aren't they? And as they trudge out again with another child, it's like, this isn't working. It's working. It's working. There's hope. Don't set your heart on putting them to death. Second part, maybe for teenagers, I don't know. But it's like, look, they will get through this. It's a growing process. Their brains are growing and forming, and God gave them to you through this stage. You know, they have studied the neurology, especially of young boys, and we're stupid. Our brains are just not fully formed yet. It's just, it is what it is. And I'm sorry, the amount of times that Jenna has turned to me and she says, "Is that normal?" I go, "Well, yeah." Because that's what we are, is we're just growing. And we don't have it figured out. Genesis 29:20 says, "Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her." I know that's not a parenting verse, but it's a verse about hearts. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. If you love your kids, you're going to find this to be true. There are going to be some days that are long, but the years are going to go by like that. And so I want you to cherish them. I want you to realize that every stage that your kid is at has something that they will lose. Every stage is that way. Baby stage, all the way up, there's always something new coming in and something old going out. Right now I have kids who call skunks stunks. Do you have any idea how adorable that is? I smell a stunk. That, by the way, was an English language miss. We absolutely missed it when we didn't just call skunks stunks. But someday, they're going to call him a skunk, and a little part of me is going to die inside. Because I will miss that. I will miss that fun stage where they called it a stunk. Had a kid who called a backpack his pack-pack. And he called it his pack-pack so much that his older sister went to school and said, "Yeah, brought my pack-pack." And all the older kids looked at her pretty funny. I mean, these are fun stages of life where your kids get words a little funny, or they have those little funny kid jokes. And then there are fun stages when they start putting pieces together and understanding things that they didn't before. That's a fun stage. And then it's a fun stage when they start getting older and realize all that stuff that you said to them, now they're saying to their kids. That's adorable stage too. All of them have fun things. Love your kids and understand that wherever they're at right now is a great place. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, "For everything there's a season, a time for every matter under heaven. He's made everything beautiful in its time." Do you believe that as a parent? He's made everything beautiful in its time. I think every parent ought to stamp that one in their heart. He's made everything beautiful in its time, because there's times in parenting where we're like, "No, this is not beautiful. I'm changing diapers." But it is. Every stage has a beauty to it. The fourth thing is, I want you to understand that God gave you this child and God gave this child you. This is not a mistake. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. That verse is about the apostles and the gospel, of how they were imperfect men and yet they had the most perfect thing, the gospel of Jesus Christ, that these imperfect men were carrying. This treasure in earthen jars. But you could just as easily apply that concept to parenting. Because when God gives you a child, He gives you a soul. Could there be a more precious gift? A more precious thing on this planet than a human soul made in the image of God? And He hands it to you, and you walk out of that hospital, and you have no idea what you're doing. Any parents remember that feeling driving home from the hospital and they put the kid in the car seat and you drive back there and you're like, "This is really weird. I didn't have to sign anything." Like, they're just letting me go with a little human being. There should have been more training, I'm sure of it. But the truth of the matter is that God gave you that child. Whether that child came home biologically, whether that child came home through adoption, it doesn't matter. We know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to His purpose. You ever have a child and you're like, how on earth am I going to parent this child? They're so different than me. How is that going to possibly work out? Romans 8:28 tells you it will work out. Maybe God gave you that child who's different than you because you needed them to be different than you so you could learn some things and they could learn some things too. Or ever have a child and you're like, how am I ever going to parent this child? They're exactly like me. That one's almost worse. But the truth of the matter is that God will cause these things to work together for good. God gave you that child, and God doesn't make mistakes. And I need you to remember that as you are raising your kids. And I also need you to remember that if your kids are grown. And whether they're faithful to the Lord after they're grown or not, if you have kids who are rebellious to the Lord, they're still your kids, and you were still given them by God. And you are their best hope. And God doesn't make any mistakes. And I'm thankful you're their parent. Behold, children are heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward. Children are a gift from the Lord. God gave you that child, and God gave that child you. Don't lower the standard, but have compassion on the growth process. We tend to make the mistake sometimes of just wanting to lower the standard just because it would make things easier. But that's not the right answer, because we live in a very cruel world where the world will not lower its standard or make things easier just because mom and dad did. But it says, as a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him, for he knows our frame, he remembers that we are dust. Look, God doesn't say, well, it doesn't matter whether you do right or wrong. He cares deeply about that. But on the other hand, he is your father, and he does remember our frame and that we're made of dust. He gets that it's just hard for you. This is one of the things that I struggle with when I'm teaching my kids math. Because I'm teaching them math, and for them it's all brand new, and for me it's simple. It wasn't always simple, right? Now, yeah, of course I have no problem with my times tables now. I had two math teachers to drill that into my head, so I don't have that problem now. But I definitely did at one point. You think about it, all the things that we struggle with, God doesn't struggle with any of them. What's hard for us is easy for Him. But he shows compassion to those who fear him. He understands their frame and remembers they're made of dust. Understand with your kids that there is a difference between a mistake and them being a failure. Understand that with your kids, that you always got to tell them right and wrong, and you always have to stand by that. Don't say, oh, it's okay if it's not okay. But say, no, that wasn't okay, but I love you. And you'll get it next time. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. That is not a politically correct verse. But it is there for a reason. Kids are foolish. When you discipline your children, it should be to drive folly from them, not because you're angry with them. Understand the difference. My job should be to help them flee foolishness and move towards wisdom, not, you dumb kid, come here and I beat on you. The rod of discipline drives foolishness from a child, but when we as parents confuse look, my job is to help you understand the standard and live by it. If we don't approach it from that standpoint with a heart of compassion, but instead, I'm frustrated because you haven't figured it out yet. Of course you haven't figured it out yet. Time hasn't made us equals. It's a journey for kids to learn the things that they're going to need. In Luke chapter 15, we have the story of the prodigal son. And I want you to remember this. Because this sermon isn't just for those who have little tiny kids. We've got people, the whole process, right? We got brand new babies that were just born. And we have parents whose kids have long left the house. What if my kids leave the house and they're not faithful to the Lord? They haven't obeyed the gospel. Or they did, and then they've left the house and they've gone wayward. I want you to remember Luke 15, verse 17. When he came to himself, is what the text says. When he came to himself. That is, when the prodigal son woke up and remembered who he was, then he went back to his father. You know how he remembered who he was? Because his father had ingrained all that stuff in him over the years. And he tried to shove it off to the side. And he tried to ignore it. And he tried to go his own way. But eventually at some point he woke up and said, I can't ignore what I know. As a parent, don't lower the standard. But have compassion on the process that your kid may be nuts sometimes. And they're just going to have to come to themselves. But when he did, he arose and he came to his father. And while he was still a long way off, what does his father do? His father saw him and felt compassion and ran, embraced him and kissed him. The sixth thing is communicate with your spouse. If you do not have a spouse and you are raising children without a spouse, you have a harder go of it. And I will just tell you up front, that is hard. And you have a lot of compassion for me. If we're through whatever circumstances you've been placed in a position where you are having to raise your children either without a fellow Christian parent or simply as a single parent. And before I talk about those who communicate with their spouse, I'm going to talk about those single parents, and I want you to understand that you need to be communicating with somebody too. The time that you would spend to communicate with a spouse, I want you to spend that extra time in prayer. I want you to spend that extra time in prayer and ask God to fill in the gap. Because God will take care of you. God offers grace in circumstances that are less than ideal. There have been many, many cases of single mothers that have raised godly children, though they were placed in a position they never wanted to be in. There is no way we could ever recommend the way the world does and say, oh, it's the same. It's not the same. But I will also tell you that if you are a God-fearing person and you trust in the Lord and you pray to Him, He can fill in the gaps if you're in a tough circumstance. Proverbs 1:8 says, hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. Proverbs 6, my son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Proverbs 23, listen to your father who gave you life and do not despise your mother when she is old. You notice the tandem of father and mother. If you want to parent with joy, communicate with your spouse so that your mother's teaching and your father's teaching are the same thing. I remember when I was learning how to drive, this was very apparent to me as a child. I was learning to drive, and my dad, for whatever reason, you know, we all have our driving idiosyncrasies. My dad, he drives very close to the center line, the center yellow. And so that's important to him. My mom really wanted me to drive close to the shoulder because she didn't want to die. And so when I was driving with my dad, I had to drive and kind of put the car closer to that side. And when I was driving with my mom, I had to drive and put the car closer to the shoulder. And then they had other little things too, like where to put your hands on the steering wheel. They each had their own idiosyncrasies. And it became apparent at a certain point that I was learning to drive two ways. And I finally had to come to my parents and I go, which one of you is going to teach me? Because I couldn't handle two. It was like just too much. I was just losing my mind. And it was my mom. And it made a difference because consistency mattered, right? The way they handled it was say, okay, just don't drive with your dad. He's terrifying. But in day-to-day living, kids are constantly testing this, right? What does mom say? What does dad say? And if you're saying different things, they're going to play you against each other, and that'll make life really hard. One of the best things you can do for your parenting is kick your kids out and spend some time with your spouse. And when the kids see you doing that, they're probably going to want to come in and say, what are you, no, we want to sit on the couch here. No, get out. Because this time belongs to your mother and I. Go on a walk with your spouse. Don't take the kids. Because they need to know the father's instruction and the mother's teaching, they come from the same place. And then the last thing, I want you to take the time to treasure the good things, the successes, the memories. We count up so many of the hard things so much of the time. We get, you know, our hearts get wrapped up in the struggles and the failures. But look, you have so many things that are wonderful memories with your kids along the way. In Luke chapter 2, verse 19, it says, Mary treasured up all these things, pondering them in her heart. Luke 2:51, he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them, and his mother treasured up all these things in her heart. One of the most defining characteristics we have of Mary is that when stuff happened that was important, there were milestones, they were a big deal, she would take that and file that away in her heart and not forget about it. Take pictures of your kids and then go look at those pictures from time to time. Don't just let Google look at them. You look at them too. Take time to walk down memory lane. Enjoy the process. Remember the good times. Because as you do that, you will remind yourself why you're doing this. In 3 John verse 4, John says, I have no greater joy than to hear my children are walking in the truth. When your kids get it, you have a little kid and all of a sudden you look down and they're praying before their meal, I want you to stop and I want you to remember and treasure that moment. When you have your little kids and they walk out of their Bible class and they've got some coloring page that they've done and they want to show it to you, I want you to grab it and I want you to look at it. I want you to get down at their level and I want you to tell them how proud you are of them and I want you to treasure that moment. Because those things matter. One of the keys to successfully enjoying parenting is to stop and smell the roses from time to time. At this time, we're going to have an invitation song. And as we sing the invitation song, if you are not yet a Christian, if you're ready to obey the gospel and follow God, we invite this as an opportunity for you to be baptized into Christ, have your sins washed away, and to begin a new life as a child of God. If we can help you to do that, please come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.